Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
It's in the past, it's in the past. And we look forward, buy our football positive. We're wearing Tottenham shirts, we buy the Tottenham white.
And still Ricky Villa! What a fantastic run! He scored!
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the Tottenham Way, which is being recorded on the eve of what I think it's fair to say is our biggest game of the season so far against Manchester United in the League Cup. Wembley is, well, not so very far away, but of course, United are going to be on a high, having won against Manchester City, albeit in a pretty low quality derby. Spurs should be on a high as well after that roasting of Southampton. I'm Marcus Buckland. Tom Barkley of The Sun is with me today. He's been at Ange's press conference. Lots of interesting little snippets of information about some of the injured players. A word about Daniel Levy, the chant, of course. He was also talking, although he didn't want to talk, about Marcus Rashford. So, Tom, let's start with the injuries, because I had this this hope, which has been proven to be totally wrong, that Van de Ven was going to be fit this week. I understand he will not be available until early in the new year. And in fact, Ange has been very precise in terms of who's going to be fit to play and when.
Yeah, hi, Marcus. Yeah, he was quite specific about a few of the injury updates and where the respective recoveries are at for a few of the players that have been out. I guess after Van de Ven and Romero suddenly turned up in the Chelsea game, albeit for not for that long, feels like it was worth sort of catching up to see where it was at, just in case we could get the sense that there might be any sort of shock inclusions. But based on what he said today, I would not expect anyone to be back for the Man United game. The only one that has a possibility is Destiny Adogi, who he said has soreness. It's not actually an injury. And it really depends on how he's feeling, I guess, ahead of the game. He's not ruling him out at this point. And then obviously Yves Bissouma returns from a suspension. But then when it came to some of the other players, he was a bit more specific. So on Van de Ven and Romero, he basically said it will be the new year. He couldn't be too precise on when. I didn't get the sense it was going to be, you know, the new year, you know, ages away, because bear in mind, the new year's what, a few weeks away now, isn't it? So that would fit with the timeline that we had initially. I mean, Romero, when he first was out, you know, reports from Argentina were suggesting 6 weeks, so that would be into January. Van de Ven, we got the sense that it was probably going to be 2 to 3 weeks, so probably up until January as well. So we'll see on those players. The good news is that Mikey Moore, who's been out since back end of October with this virus that he's been struggling with, is back in training now. So he and Ben Davis, who has obviously been out with a hamstring injury that picked up at Bournemouth, were described by Ange as the next cabs off the rank, i.e. players are going to be back, and they're hoping maybe next week for those two. So I suppose, you know, looking at maybe the Boxing Day game for Davis in particular, who's, you know, with the defensive problems they've got, that will be a big boost, albeit Archie Gray had a very good game against Southampton. And then finally, Richarlison, the sort of ever-forgotten Richarlison at the moment, unfortunately, because of his injury problems. He specifically said the first week of the new year. So I don't know whether that means, I think, is it Newcastle on the 4th of January or Tamworth, perhaps? You would have thought they'd come back with him sort of with kid gloves. But then again, they tried that last time and he had a setback straight away. So I don't know quite where we're at with Richarlison's sort of rigidity with his physique and the Ange style of play. All I do know is when he plays, despite the way he can be much maligned at times from the Spurs fan base, largely because of his lack of minutes because of injury, he normally has an impact of some sort. So given the problems they've got in depth up front, I think his return would be welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, without wishing to tempt fate, early January, League Cup semi-finals. So if Spurs can get past Manchester United, you would like to think they'll have a pretty strong squad to pick for those two-legged semi-finals. Did you get the impression from Ange? I know I have banged on about the League Cup all season, and we know from past experience that Ange hasn't always considered the League Cup to be a priority. Fulham last season, of course, Coventry at the start of this season. But now, with a semi-final beckoning and with the league position, well, anything could happen with regards to the league. Did you get the impression that Ange considers this match to be the biggest match of the season so far?
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, he was sort of asked as if, you know, a trophy was on, they were on the verge of winning one. And he sort of made the point, look, hold on, we're in the quarterfinals, we're not in the final. That's when you're, you know, a match away from winning it. So a bit of realism about where they are and how far they've got to go on that front. He did reiterate his point that he's consistently made throughout his time here of just winning a trophy wouldn't be the sort of be all end all for him in terms of how he wants to transform Tottenham into perennial competitors for major honours. But he didn't downplay how it would help with that process. And obviously he's very aware, he's acutely aware of the desperation is the word I would put it, of supporters in the Tottenham fan base to finally end that barren silverware run, which I would argue, despite being a Newcastle fan and us having not won anything for forever, it almost feels stronger amongst the Tottenham fan base compared to anyone else, that sort of desperation to end that at long last. So he's acutely aware of that.
Yeah, we could be on a collision course with your boys, depending on how things go in the quarterfinals this week. There is going to be a fantastic atmosphere inside the ground of that. There's absolutely no doubt. I'm looking on social media and all the regular contributors are saying, come on, if you're not prepared to go there and sing for 90 minutes, don't turn up. One of the songs that is going to be sung and sung and sung relates to Mr. Levy. We heard it a lot at Southampton on Sunday. I don't care about Levy because he doesn't care about me, etc., etc., Kulusevski. Well, first of all, I mean, I'm sure Ange was asked about the fans' reaction to Daniel Levy, which is a very difficult question for the manager to answer. So two things for you here, Tom. I mean, first of all, how did Ange deal with that particular subject? And secondly, I mean, do you think that it's a good thing? It's almost bonding the fans together even more. Or potentially, if things start to go wrong on the pitch, is there going to be a very negative attitude around the ground by the, I don't know, say the midway point in the second half?
Well, there's two quite big questions there. So let's deal with the first one and how Ange dealt with it. I mean, he obviously knew it was coming. We didn't really try him with it after the Southampton, in the aftermath of the Southampton game. I thought about asking him about the Levy chance, because obviously that was a big part of that game. And maybe I should have, but I just kind of got, by now I've kind of got a sense of what he's like after games, even after victories. I didn't get a sense with that particular question. I would have got very far with it. It wasn't like it was a desperate need to ask it at that point. He's always better in pre-match. Even having said that, I kind of knew what I get or what we get from asking this question anyway. He's a pretty diplomatic, you know, savvy guy when it comes to dealing with these kind of questions. And we did actually speak more questions on these chants and in the embargo section. I can't really talk about that right now. But the one question that was asked in the open section was just literally his take on them. And as I say, he answered them kind of how I expected. He said, he reiterated the point he's made consistently, whether it be about his own position or his style of play or the ownership or of players or whatever. He said he'll never tell fans how they should express themselves or what to think. They are free to do that. And, you know, when it comes to the away fan, not like saying this today, but it's, you know, Bournemouth and Southampton, you know, he's talked about the away fans. You know, they're a hardcore bunch and they pay their money. They deserve to have their say in any way they want to, within reason, I suppose. But what he did do quite sort of masterfully is deflect it onto the need or the hope from his point of view that they'll bring an atmosphere in the Man United game akin to what his team experienced and, to be honest, struggled with in Galatasaray in particular and at Ibrox at Rangers. I mean, Galatasaray in particular was such a sort of hostile atmosphere that it did feel like the Spurs in that day kind of wilted. And if they can recreate that kind of environment to give Man United a difficult night like they did against Man City, then that could really go a long way to pulling off what would be a big win for them in their season. The second point was about what do I think, basically, how the atmosphere is going to go, do you think?
Well,
is
that
what
you're... yeah, you were partly that. And also, I mean, I'm torn because the thing that struck me in particular, Tom, about the victory at Southampton on Sunday, aside from the emphatic nature of it, was that the supporters sang that Levy chant as loudly when Spurs were 5-0 up as they were when they were 1-0 up. In other words, it wasn't a result-orientated response. It was there, it was deliberate, it was planned, and I'm sure it's going to be even louder and more vociferous on Thursday. And I am thinking in one way that this bond, because for better or for worse, I think a majority of the supporters do feel that the current owners have not done enough on the pitch in terms of Tottenham's success. So I'm wondering if that's going to translate in a positive way, or if Spurs are starting to struggle and then a little bit of internecine hostility creeps in, could it become a very negative night for the club, both on and off the pitch?
Yeah, it's what I'm wondering, really. I mean, I was at that Southampton game and that chant in particular, which I hadn't heard before, it's a bit of an earworm, isn't it? I was sort of humming it on the way back. And that's not revealing anything about whether I agree with it or what. It's just quite...
Straight back down the middle there, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those songs that just sort of sticks in your mind. So I wouldn't be surprised if it got going again. Without stepping again on the sort of embargo section, I can sort of tell you kind of the questions I asked of Ange were, one, when it comes to the anti-Levy in particular or Enoch feeling, surely he would have sensed that as the first sign of a difficult sticky patch that would rear its head again, because it just has done in years gone by, and how he sort of expected that. And then also, would a trophy go a long way to sort of is it possible to sort of mend that rift between a disconnect between supporters and the ownership? And I won't sort of go into it. To be honest, it wasn't like what he said was particularly amazing, but that was kind of the way I was going. And it sort of underlines kind of how I'm wondering about it. Personally, I don't know. It feels, you would know even better than me as a long serving fan, wondering if that can really be mended. It does feel like a trophy or lack of silverware is so fundamental to this whole frustration and with the ownership that, so by that very nature, if they do start winning stuff, maybe that surely should make some sort of difference. But when you hear about sort of this week, certain aspects of the fan, certain fan groups and sort of distancing themselves from the club over various things that, in terms of dealing with the atmosphere in the ground, it doesn't sound great, and it just feels quite fractured again. And so it's hard. It feels like there's a long way to go before, but if that can be mended. Now, regarding this particular game, all Spurs fans going tomorrow will realise what a big game it is for their season, and you would like to think that that would be the primary focus. Whereas at Southampton, obviously it'd been a bad run, but it's the Premier League, which is going a bit pear-shaped generally. I mean, you never know. They get a couple of great results like Liverpool, then suddenly we're back on board. But given their sort of wild inconsistency this season, it doesn't feel like you can hang your hat on that being a success. So, but obviously they're not going to go down or anything. So it felt like a good time to make their voices heard if they wanted to do that. Whereas this League Cup game is a real sort of, if you lose, you're out, and it's another massive blow to their trophy hopes. So you would have thought that would be front and center of their minds. And the fact that it sounds like there is a protest being planned for Liverpool at the weekend. I don't know how big that will be or how successful it will be. We'll have to wait and see with the suggestion that there'll be sort of balloons put out on the 24th minute to mark the 24 years of ownership under Enoch. So I don't know, we'll have to wait and see, because there was last year there was another protest and it's not like it fell flat, but it wasn't quite as sort of massively impactful in that particular game. I forget which match it was. It might be Man United actually. But then again, if things go wrong in the game and suddenly Spurs looking out of it, 2-0 down or something, then yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone will be surprised if suddenly that frustration of that would be turned on Daniel Levy.
Yeah, I think it's an absolutely massive few days for the club. I mean, I think it's you know, I don't think I'm going over top to suggest that the season in some ways actually hangs upon it. If Spurs go out of the League Cup and if they're then, you know, mauled by Liverpool on Sunday, I think there's going to be a really unpleasant atmosphere heading towards a tough Christmas period as well. And we're still missing some important players in Nottingham Forest. They're playing really well at the moment. That's a difficult away game. Wolves will probably come to Tottenham with a new manager. Okay, the third round of the FA Cup should be all right. But this is a critical few days. And I'm sure the atmosphere will be fantastic to begin with. I do fear that if it goes wrong and, you know, Manchester United, they're just developing, of course, under Amorim. But I spoke to one dedicated United fan yesterday and he said, although the quality of the game on Sunday against City looked poor, he could see one or two coherent signs already that the United players at least understood what they have to do under the new manager, and that slowly but surely they will start to do it. And I just hope that that is not on Thursday night. And talking of Manchester United, obviously, as we head towards the January transfer window, some names are being mentioned, some possible signings. And one of those is Marcus Rashford. And the quotes I've seen from Ange made it very clear, from what I could gather, that he is not the least bit interested in signing him. He started off by saying, oh, you know, he's a Manchester United player. I'm not going to talk about other players. I was waiting for someone to say, would you like him to become one of your players? I don't think the actual question came out. But is that a 100% negative? There is no way that Rashford is coming to Tottenham.
No, I disagree with your assessment of what Ange said. I don't think Marcus Rashford will be signing for Tottenham because he's on such massive money. And why would you would guess that it'd be a loan deal from Spurs' perspective? Why would Man United do that unless they were so desperate to get rid of him? I just don't think it makes sense that Spurs would go and just get him. But if you're basing it purely off what Ange said, he was specifically asked whether he would be interested in signing him. So he started off with being asked about Rashford's situation. And when he says he was not interested, it wasn't not interested in signing him. He said, I'm not interested in talking about him at all. I think he knows that he answers a question a certain way. We write about it and or people talk about it and it suddenly becomes a news story. So he was basically not wanting to go there at all. That's what he meant by that. But then he was followed up by James Ollie of ESPN, asking whether, I'm just looking through the quotes now, asking whether, whether saying that Spurs have been linked to Rashford in the past, which is true. And would you go for him in January? Specifically, would you try and sign him in January? And he said, oh, mate, if I looked at everyone we were linked to, I would have no time to do anything else, to be honest. I've got other people to do that part of the process. For us, we've been pretty disciplined in what we're trying to build here and we'll continue to be so, which is basically I'm not wanting to answer that question. And it was followed up with, so is that a no? And he said, that's a not on my radar, which is a pretty stock phrase for Ange. And he said that you can ask me about Marcus, but you can ask me about every single Premier League footballer and I'll say the same thing. Basically didn't want to go near it, didn't want to say anything. So I suppose if you're taking literally from his response, he's not ruling him out. He's not saying he wants to sign him either, but he's definitely not saying we'll not be doing that. And there have been times, you know, when I asked him about potentially signing a free agent goalkeeper after Vicario getting injured, he said, no, we're not going to do that. So there are times he does rule things out. So he wasn't doing that, but I wouldn't be a Spurs fan going, oh, we're going to be signing Marcus Rashford now based off the back of that information.
Well, I mean, this Rashford, it's so difficult these days to make a proper judgment of Rashford because we know what he can do. We also know what he's not been doing. And, you know, one of the goals that Spurs scored at Old Trafford a few weeks ago had the classic involvement or non-involvement of Rashford in the build-up. And his attitude and everything else makes me feel as though he's a player Spurs will be very wary of signing. However, he said he wants a new challenge. And with the injuries up front, who knows? I still think it's in the centre of defence that Tottenham need to try and sign somebody. I see that Milan, is it Skriniar? I don't know how you pronounce his surname, of PSG is being linked. But I guess we're going to head into a period now, Tom, where all sorts of names are thrown about. I don't know if you can get just a vibe from being around the club that, you know, assuming now that Ange's position is safe, they will be prepared to splash some cash in January to have as strong a second half to the campaign as possible.
Well, they've got money to spend, so that is definitely a possibility. Ange has sort of consistently said, a couple of weeks ago, said if we're in the same situation as they were then, with players missing by the time January rolls around, then they pretty much guarantee they'll have to do something. But I guess injuries are easing up a bit, so that might make a difference on that front. Although with Spurs, you never know, it could be always one more game away from the next injury coming. I would have thought they would do some sort of business, but as boring an answer as it is, it's just rare that, you know, major stuff gets done in January. Although last year, you know, signing Werner on loan, as much as people weren't overly enamoured with that move, was a bit of a surprise because it was done quite early as well, which is not often what Spurs do. And then obviously Dragozin was the main signing too. So I wouldn't be surprised if they look to do sort of one or two next month. You know, Rashford-wise, like I say, personally, I can't see it. Just the amount of money he's on doesn't really fit in with this wage structure. I mean, presumably it would have to be, I would have guessed it would be a loan deal and on massively reduced wages, a bit like sort of Werner. But Man United, would they really want to do that? Yeah, I guess like theoretically, Rashford would fit in very nicely into this system that Ange likes to play with the sort of pace in behind. You know, it's kind of like how Sonny does down the left. But yeah, that would be a surprise, but I'm definitely not going to rule it out. I haven't really looked into it, like how likely that is. But just off, you know, looking at it sort of objectively on the face of it, it feels an unlikely one for Tottenham.
Yeah, well, I mean, Spurs, to be fair, you mentioned Timo Werner, and I mean, I'm wondering whether Timo might be leaving this coming January after the comments from Postecoglou following the Rangers game. But Spurs have got a pretty good record. Dragozin is starting to show his worth. And of course, a couple of years back, we got both Kulusevski and Bentancur in that window. So Spurs have done okay as far as that's concerned. You know, I mentioned Ange's position, and I think it's become very clear, certainly after the Southampton game, that the majority of the fans and everybody else want to see him stay. There are no obvious alternatives. It's still relatively early in his tenure. He is a little bit hamstrung in terms of the players he can sign, etc., etc. So it would be pretty harsh. Bearing in mind also that, you know, when Spurs are good, they're very, very good. But he was quite interesting talking about Russell Martin, amongst others. Of course, Martin was sacked within an hour or so of the defeat to Spurs the other day. And I saw the quote from saying, oh, you know, sometimes that chart of you'll be sacked in the morning is now... He's now out of date. You don't have to wait till the morning.
Yeah, that was quite funny. I mean, he was obviously being quite serious and nice about Russell Martin. But he was just, yeah, you might have to change it to getting sacked tonight. It was sacked in the evening, respectively, because it happened so quickly. I only just left Southampton by the time that news broke. What was interesting about Ange's comments, he said it was crazy, isn't it? And he can't get his head around about the sort of managerial turnover and how relatively short tenures managers get. And the thing that he said was the idea that clubs give managers time to sort of build something. It just doesn't happen anymore. I'm slightly paraphrasing, but not far off it. And how he sort of backed both Gary O'Neill, who obviously got sacked at Wolves, and Russell Martin as good young managers who will bounce back. But he basically said that they will, what's likely for their career, because they're quite early on in their their managerial sort of path, this is probably going to be par for the course. It just happens more and more that there are shorter and shorter tenures. You know, I see his point, I suppose. He is obviously speaking from the managerial fraternity perspective. It's pretty rare you're going to get a manager come, whether they're in a job or not, come out and say, oh yeah, that was the right decision. Personally, with Russell Martin, like obviously he got them promoted, so that should not be forgotten. But I feel like Southampton were looking doomed. Maybe they're doomed anyway. They probably were with the quality of players they've got, but maybe some of the style of play, it felt like they were going to go down. And you could argue that Tottenham's a bit different. I know it might not feel it from the fans' point of view, if you have sort of question marks over Postecoglou's approach, whether it will be successful or not, and times are wasting if you think it isn't. But Spurs aren't going to get relegated, whereas Southampton pretty much are. But when you're in that position, you're talking about people's jobs, you're talking about loads of money going out of the club, the worry of being sucked down to the lower divisions and struggling to get back out of it. So I don't blame Southampton for making the decision they made. You can blame them for some of the decisions they've made ever since that ownership has come in, but that's for another, as for a Southampton podcast, I suppose. Sure. But when coming back to Spurs, what's interesting about his comments is it kind of flies in the face of everything he's trying to do at Tottenham. His whole rhetoric has been about building something, hasn't it? And and not trying to make short-term gains to disrupt what is his long-term plan, and you know how in the his long-term success will be glorious doing it his way, and having to really sort of get players to buy into his method, all this stuff, which whether you buy into it or not, it's just funny because he's just portrayed clubs everywhere never giving managers a chance of doing that. So how does that quite stack up? Which is something I did follow up on in the embargo section on that, but it is interesting.
Well, it struck me as though Russell Martin is an extreme version of Ange. I mean, he just wasn't going to back down on his principles of attack, attack, attack. And yeah, I mean, Southampton are going only in one direction. So I don't blame the ownership in that regard. I feel a bit sorry for Gary O'Neill, actually. I know this is a Spurs podcast, but we've got Wolves in a couple of weeks and he did a really good job last season. But again, he's not had much money to spend and he's had to sell some of his players. So that's a little bit of a poison chalice. In terms of the game then, Tom, as Dan's not here, he hates making predictions, but I think we can do this. The one thing actually, well, obviously I don't want us to lose, but I also sincerely hope that this match does not go to penalties, because I don't think Fraser Forster saved one in his 30-year career. I mean, I could be totally wrong about that, but he certainly didn't look like he was going to save either of Cole Palmer's the other day. I imagine that Onana's actually got a much better record. So I mean, you're the sort of man who will be able to pull out those stats straight away. I should have actually given you a bit of a heads up before. But I don't want a big match like this to end as a penalty shootout. What's your hunch as to how it's going to play out?
Well, you know, Man United look a different outfit. Obviously, under Amorim, it's quite quick. He's quite quickly imprinted his style of play. We all know about the 3-4-3 and how wingers like Garnacho and Rashford are either going to have to adapt to try and fit into his system, or it's not going to work for them. Albeit, you know, those two players have got their own individual situations why they weren't in the team squad the other day. But they look a more organised outfit, a bit more threatening. Albeit, having said that, if they'd lost to Man City, and if it weren't for, you know, an awful rush of blood to the head from, or terrible back pass and foul from Nunes, they probably would have, and it would have been three straight defeats. So they can be got at. We're in the infancy of Amorim's sort of turnaround. You know, he was trying to play Mason Mount. He's got injured already. So it's not like he's not got the ideal squad yet. And maybe this is a good time. If he is the man, if he's such a good manager that he can turn Man United around, which I am sceptical that they've got the players to suddenly become right at the top again, and they're up against it financially to be able to change that. But that's, again, Man United debate. But this is a good time for Spurs to go at them. And I know it was only Southampton, and they're obviously, they look doomed and they're bereft of confidence and they sacked the manager. But it was nice to see how many chances Spurs were making again. We're really opening them up at will. Players who they look threatening. They had players off the bench, you know, Johnson coming off the bench looking a threat, should have scored. Even Werner coming off the bench and supplying that chance that he should have scored, albeit maybe he was offside. Suddenly the squad looks a little bit stronger. And part of that is because the younger players like Bergvall and Gray are stepping up as well. And, you know, I know this is a League Cup game rather than Premier League, but it is mad when you look at the stats. They've lost seven games, won seven games, and yet their goal difference is plus 17, which I can't recall anyone near ever having that before from a club. It just shows you how many goals they score. And in fact, I saw some stats the other day about how they're not far off the best, which would speak to this. They're not far off the best in terms of scoring goals per game and conceding goals per game. So it's kind of very Tottenham to still be in the position that they're in, despite doing so well. I guess stats can tell you a lot of things, but it shows you that they're definitely a threat, and I think they can definitely cause Man United problems. So there is no reason why they can't go and win this game, and I hope they do.
Well, yeah, I sincerely hope that as well, and I think it's going to be a thriller. I'll probably be more nervous if Spurs go 2-0 up after 10 minutes, because we know what tends to happen thereafter. But it should be a fantastic night in terms of the atmosphere. And Tom, you're absolutely right. It's a really difficult one to call, but I'm crossing everything that this is going to be the start of something glorious. That's the word that Ange used. It will be glorious one day. Well, let's make that first day Thursday. Thanks to Tom Barkley of The Sun. I am Marcus Buckland. Get behind the team. Come on, you Spurs.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Are you missing the sounds that matter most? What if you could hear every word, every laugh, and every moment crystal clear without spending thousands on expensive hearing aids? Introducing Audion Atom, the world's most affordable FDA-approved hearing aid. With the revolutionary A2 chip, you get premium sound, zero background noise, and a 24-hour rechargeable battery. They even have Bluetooth connectivity to connect to your cell phone or TV. Unlike those traditional bulky $5,000 prescription hearing aids, the Audion Atom is 90% smaller, 20 times cheaper, and works instantly. No visits to the audiologist needed. Audion Atom has over 500,000 happy customers who have trusted Audion Atom to restore their hearing. Our 100% money-back guarantee means zero risk to try. Don't like them? Simply return them and get your money back. They also come with a lifetime warranty. For the next 72 hours, the Audion Atom is 53% off. Go to tryhearingaid.com right now to order your pair for only $99. Again, go to tryhearingaid.com to order your pair for only $99. Order now before it's too late, as these hearing aids have sold out over 10 times this year. With Audion Atom, you can hear life again.